Today's episode, we're going to talk about Mark Stoops and the high-paid coach looking for more money, paid players. Jim Harbaugh and his contract situation. Oregon, Washington. A little Greg Sankey. We got an update on Texas Pete. It's a big one. Texas Pete lawsuit.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Oh, they'd invite him if they could. If Colorado gets 6-6, they're going the Rose Bowl, baby. Come on now.
Russ Dellinger.
You look at the top 10, maybe even 15 teams, and everybody has a better win than Michigan. Everybody.
And SI's Pat Forte.
That's how bitter he is over these results. You tweeted that there was bad bear controversy. There's not. Your bear lost. That's it.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. And wanted to get to this right off the bat. Monday night. Interesting comments beyond just Kentucky football. But Mark Stoops, Kentucky football coach, went on his radio show. Not a fun radio show when you lose 51-13 to Georgia. I'm guessing the previous few radio shows were a little more joyous. But anyway, he was on there. And he took some calls. There's a guy named Jason in Louisville called. Pat, do you know Jason?
Yeah, he lives down the street. No, okay. No, I don't know Jason.
You might. Was it Pat?
I might.
Did you have like a disguise your voice like technology?
I don't make a habit of calling radio shows or even listening to coaches' radio shows. Some of the worst radio possible. Anyway.
Coach. We're going to beat them,
Coach. You're fine.
Coach, we're going to beat them. I think we're going to beat them. Well, I got the boys ready. I'm going to get the boys ready. We're working our tails off out here.
We need y'all to be loud and proud in that stadium. Let's go.
Get there early. Yep. Well, Jason in Louisville complained that Kentucky, you know, one of the things about Mark Stoops is it's got the greatest job because there's no pressure. Makes $8.6 million a year, and it's like, maybe you beat Georgia, maybe you don't. No one cares. Jason in Louisville cares. So he calls in and points out that Kentucky's only beaten two teams that finished the season with a winning record in SEC play. Went deep on the record.
Yeah. Jason and, doing some work.
Yeah,
yeah, running some numbers stats. Crunching.
Yeah, it was a pretty good stat. Stoops didn't seem to like that too much. He says, you're climbing a ladder in the SEC. You think it's easy? I sat here and watched a bunch of people try to do it. It's not easy at a lot of different schools. So believe me, I respect Jason and want his support. I'm not being sensitive about it. But bring it on, Jason. See if you can do it. So, all right, that was kind of fun. I like that. That's all good. And he's right. I mean, just Kentucky's winning the games they should win, which is not easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
Cast your eye to South Florida if you really want. Miami, and they couldn't win the game. You didn't see Mark Stoops taking a knee. Later, though, there's more discussion of how they can't beat Georgia. And he said, you've got to own it. This is Mark Stoops. You've got to solve it, and then you've got to do it. The other side of that is if you want to do that, complain, deny, or make excuse, and we're not going to do that. It is what it is. Fans have that right. I give it to them. I just encourage them to donate more because that's what those dudes are doing. I can promise you, Georgia, they bought some pretty good players. You're allowed to these days. We could use some help. Now, he ain't wrong. And Mark Stoops has done more at Kentucky than, I don't know, Pat, you know the program better than me, but since Bear Bryant or something, I don't know. I mean, there's
Brooks. Bear Bryant, Blanton Collier, those would be the only two, probably.
He's done a great job. He's made it so that anyone, Jason might not have been listening to the radio show if it wasn't for what Mark Stoops said. But it brings up this point. Dino Barber's at Syracuse kind of had a thing about his depth is gone, and there's this bit where we need more money. Now, we'll see whether Kirby feels, if he goes Jimbo on, bought a player. I didn't buy a player. It's still like that third rail to these coaches.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes. Next time might not be 51-13. Might be more. But this is my thing that's interesting. And Stoops got some blowback because the vast, 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 vast majority of the people supporting Kentucky football do not make $8.6 million a year. Mark Stoops is one of the wealthier people in the state of Kentucky. I mean, he doesn't have a bourbon fortune, but he's been making a lot of money for a long time. And so what I want to ask is this. I don't think anything Mark Stoops said is wrong. I don't blame him. Whatever. He's getting crap from Jason in Louisville. But at what point does or should these extremely high-paid coaches, because we also heard this from Mel Tucker this year, Michigan State, we don't have enough money, and he's making $9 million. Well,
he was making $9
million. Was. Maybe we'll see what he made. Until he made a very expensive phone call. Very expensive.
Chop some wood.
Chop some wood. Most expensive wood chopping session of potentially all time. Maybe someone else lost their job with a more expensive wood chopping job, but not many. All timer. Anyway, at what point do these coaches, what point does this swing where all the money goes to the head coach and at some point they sit there and say, hey, pay me $5 million, put the rest into to players. Or a school says, we're only going to pay you $5 million, but we're going to take $3.6 million here and put it to the players. Because if you go to the NFL, if this is pro sports, as they all say, and clearly you have to come up with something to compensate your players, and facilities start taking a little bit of a backseat, and like nobody blinks that Patrick Mahomes makes more money than Andy Reid. Of course he does, right? So I'm not saying we're going to get to the point where someone's making $8.7 million playing for Kentucky football. But at what point does the need for the talent cut back on the expense of these huge staffs and these really high-priced coaches? And is there an innovative coach that just says, hey, here's what I want. I want this SEC job. Let's say Kentucky, let's just say, whatever, big Power 5 job. You won't pay me this, but put all that extra money into that. Get what I'm arguing? Is there a moment where this just ends? Because they're paying him because he can get all the guys together, recruit Ohio, be pretty good. But what point does coach money matter less and maybe those salaries dip back? Is this just ever, Pat?
Well, it should. It's funny. The times we have heard coaches talk about this, the solution is never, hey, I'm voluntarily cutting my salary so that we have some more money in the athletic department pool so that can eventually be directed to our collective so that we can pay the players. It's always, hey, Jason, working second shift at the Ford plant. Fred, over at the GE plant. Hey, Jerry that works in the coal mine. You know what? We need a little more from you guys. That's where we need the money from. I know you already give and you already have annual donors and you pay too much for tickets and all that sort of thing. And we're now charging you $1 jillion for parking, and there's dynamic pricing. So it costs more to see us play Georgia than it does to see us play Akron, who we play every year. That's where the money, that's where we need the money to come from. Not from my rich pockets. You guys do it. So that was my same reaction to when Mel Tucker said it. It's the same with Mark Stoops. And yes, Mark Stoops done a very good job. But this is also, he's feeling a little bit of the new reality, maybe. He wants Kentucky to be known as a football school? Okay. John Calipari gets crap on his radio show when they only win by 20. You lose by 38 to Georgia with a team that's undefeated. Well, this comes with your $8 million salary. I know this. Georgia's talent, to me, doesn't seem to be as good as it was the last 2 years when Kentucky came closer to beating them. And I don't think Devin Leary transferred just because he likes the pastoral hillsides of surrounding Lexington, and Ray Davis transferred because he likes seeing yearlings run in the fields. I think they probably got some deals. That's what I'm guessing. So if they want more deals, let's look at who makes the money, where the money is going. As you said, Dan, the size of the staffs. And make some decisions there about where you want the money to come from, where the money needs to come from.
Are we sure about the yearling thing? I mean, I don't know. You know, running in the pastoral.
It is really nice down there around Lexington, too.
Especially this time of year. Keeneland is open. The races are on. It's very nice.
I remember talking to a basketball recruit once who went to a school up. He was from the south, and he went to a school in the north. And I said, why are you going? He's like, foliage.
Yeah, good one.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, it is pretty.
Foliage, the green kind. Dan.
Foliage, yeah. Like, okay.
We know what kind of green.
Foliage. I was impressed he knew the term, not just the leaves are like red, you know, like knew the term. I was like, okay, that's it. Man, Vermont ought to get good. What the hell's Vermont's problem?
You know, back to our talking point is I think already, you know, some of this is happening. We've seen coaches sign contracts with the clauses in the contract about how much that their new school needs to spend on NIL. So we've seen some of that stuff. I don't know that
who has done that. That's like they put that bit on the school.
On the school, right? It's been several of them. And it really started the last couple of years. Yeah.
Do you know? Do you remember anyone off the top of your head? Who?
No, but we can Google. Yeah, we can Google it and find it pretty easy because I think it's several different coaches. But they're starting. Yeah, agents are starting to put that in contracts. Coaches are starting to want some kind of commitment in print to NIL because they know of how important that it is. I can't remember if it was in Lane's New Deal, you know, with Ole Miss. I don't know why I want to say that, but it was in several contracts. I don't know if we're going to ever get to the point where schools take the money they were going to spend on staffs or tell donors, you know, you don't have to give to this. We're going to lower the coach's salary or not pay as much. But certainly the thought was, at least during the early stages of NIL, that facilities would stop. Like facility building and renovation would stop or slow down tremendously. And we've seen some of that. I think a good example is actually back at Ole Miss. I think they put a pause on their big renovations like maybe earlier this year, right? And the thought was they were focusing more on NIL. So we've seen some of that a little bit.
I just think it'll be an interesting change in how things are done, and I don't know that we're not linking to that. But certainly if you could sit there and come in with that as – I would think if I was hiring, that would be something that would interest – Michigan State, we could just say we don't have to, like, kneecap anybody on a job. Michigan State needs a job. And first off, I hear that – I read this story, and I'm involved at Michigan State. I am calling Lexington and saying – they know Jason from Louisville. This is Jason from Louisville. Come on up to MSU. Because if I'm MSU, if I'm Michigan State, I want Mark Stoops. Guy's got great ties in Ohio. And hey, you're banging your head against this wall. Come bang your head against this wall. But that wall's a lot closer. You can be in it. We've been number one in this league. Mm-hmm. We've won the league. Not easy, but it's a lot. Kentucky hadn't won the league. Kentucky ain't going to the league. So come on up to East Lansing. Get back to the Midwest. Ohio, we love you. Just hammer Youngstown all day long in recruiting. Anyway, but I would think that if I'm sitting there and I'm Michigan State and I got some candidates and a guy comes in and says, you don't pay me $9 million, pay me $5 million. We're going to put it into the players. I think that's the big thing. We're going to talk a little bit later with Ross and his interview, his day with Commissioner Sankey of the SEC, Greg Sankey. And part of it's like, where is this money coming from and all this stuff? Some priorities have to change. And I wonder just a little bit like certain schools were ahead of the game. Like if you have the foresight to say, all right, we're flipping this around. We just saw just one more before I let you go, Pat, say something. Like we just saw the Utah players get this 6 months lease on a truck. It used to only be the coach got the deal.
Right.
And now the players get the deal. We used to see shoe deals, right? This was very controversial. The coach got, right? There's a great story, Jerry Tarkanian, when he's at UNLV talking, and Sonny Vaccaro went and was working at Nike. And Sonny Vaccaro goes to UNLV and says, hey, we're going to pay you to wear Nike. You make the guys wear the Nike shoes, and I will pay you. And I think It was a low mo- it was like 25, 50. I mean, this was like the late 1970s. And Tark's sitting there going, is this legal? Like, this is a trick? Like, what are you guys doing? You can't do that, can you? It's like, yeah, you can. And right, the coaches made the money because the players wore the shoes. And now we've seen that kind of go away. And there'll be a different, you know, now, you, believe me, you're not recruiting these top guys and telling them what shoe to wear necessarily, or it's a big deal. So I just wonder where this is headed. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, no, I mean, to me, this is where this should be the wave of the future. Is the first priority should be, what's our pool of money to pay our players? And the second priority, how much do we pay our coaching staff? And third priority, how big is our coaching staff? Because as you said, you get Patrick Mahomes, you've got something. If you get Brock Bowers, yo, congratulations. Stetson Bennett, who they didn't even think was any good, but look how good he turned out to be. So, you know, you invest in the people that are most directly going to help you win. And I do believe Brock Bowers is more important than your third offensive analyst and your fourth offensive analyst and your fifth offensive analyst. So if you got to get rid of 3, 4, and 5 to pay Brock Bowers, do it.
I agree. All right. Jim Harbaugh, Michigan, 6-0. I saw one of the bowl. What's the bowl organization, Ross?
The bowl season?
Yeah, maybe that. Bowl season. They tweet out, Michigan is bowl eligible. 6-0. And I think they were selling T-shirts. I don't know. Maybe it's a fake T-shirt. You can't actually buy it. I'm thinking they have higher goals than being bowl eligible, but congratulations to the Wolverines and all the other 6-0 teams. Georgia, congratulations, you're bowl eligible.
Yeah. If everything goes completely sideways from here, Michigan can still go to the Quick Lane Bowl.
So a couple interesting things with Jim Harbaugh of late. One is his contract. He famously, in his contract, he took the pay cut after the 2020 season. They went 2-4. Everyone wanted him fired. Ward Manuel, the Michigan AD, quite deftly did not fire Jim Harbaugh. He got Harbaugh to take a pay reduction from $8 million to $4 million. And Harbaugh, being Harbaugh, said, all right, I'll do it. One of the greatest decisions in the history of Michigan football, because since that moment, they are... let's see, they're 31-3, at least something like that.
Yeah, I think that's so. They only lost to Michigan State, Georgia, and TCU.
Yeah, they've won two titles, two Big Ten titles, two playoff appearances, and they're 6-0, bowl eligible. Congratulations, GoDaddy.com bowl. We'll gladly. You ever go to you guys are going to Washington, Oregon this weekend, and there'll be like the bowl reps there from these bowl games.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's
always funny. Like, the jackets. You ain't getting these guys.
There's a red jacket, an orange jacket, and a blue jacket.
The GoDaddy Bowl is here. Why? You're just getting a free weekend. You need to scout them in person to know that I would take.
Dan, come on. It's about relationships. They got to chum it up with the ADs, presidents.
And screw up our playoff. Anyway, back to this.
I got a bowl rep story real quick. Go ahead.
I want to hear it. Okay. I love a good bowl rep story.
This was just a week and a half ago. So Colorado plays USC and loses and falls to 4-2. USC's undefeated. Usually the bowl reps do what they do. They go to the winning team, right? You know, in those situations, the two guys from the Sugar Bowl are in Colorado's press conference.
Yeah.
Colorado's 4-2.
3-2.
Yeah, at that point, 3-2. Yes, 3-2. And they're like, they just wanted to see the Deion show, man.
They'd invite them if they could. If Colorado gets 6-6, they're going to the Rose Bowl, baby. Come on now. I'll take that 10 million viewers. I mean, come on. Yeah. Enough bowl ties. They're kicking us out anyway. All right.
The Sugar Bowl's a playoff bowl. They ain't going to the Sugar Bowl.
That's true. They just want it. Yeah. It is the bowl rep. It's a great gig. Great gig. All right. So they are rolling. Now, he took that deal. Now, obviously, he wins the Big Ten the first in 2021. He goes up to the Vikings, thinks he's going to get the job. Did not. But he comes back, signs a 5-year deal worth $8.3 million. As these things go in college football, we're a year and a half later, He's looking for a new contract. He wanted a new contract last January. There was no contract offered. He was dealing with this NCAA situation, which is mostly ridiculous, but it's not about a cheeseburger. Not about a cheeseburger. Just remember that. He has gotten a 3-game suspension. Now is, are we going to get a new deal? Are we going to get a new deal? So they asked him. He said, like anybody, I've said it. You want to be somewhere you're wanted. If they like what you do and how you do it, your bosses tell you that, and then that gets reflected in a contract. Bottom line, any of us, right? We want to be somewhere they like how you do it and what you do. That is true, although in the real world, generally you sign a 5-year deal, you ain't renegotiating a year and a half. These guys are a little out of touch, but in theory, that's how it works. Asked if he feels wanted at Michigan, he said, yeah, I do. And then Angelique Shingelis of the Detroit News texted Ward Manuel, and he said, I hope to make that a reality in the near future. And that was this about a new contract. So Harbaugh may get a new contract. They generally wanted to wait, but I don't know that they're not going to get this thing done finally, quickly, to make sure, because you do not want Jim Harbaugh going into the offseason feeling like, hey, the NFL's calling, right? Especially the Chicago Bears. Where he was a big star, and it's right over there, right. And they could have the number one and number two pick. So they're all that. Now, at the same time, why does Jim Harbaugh need to? I have this part of the story, too, so we can discuss either part. P.J. Fleck, after Michigan annihilates Minnesota. Now, Minnesota's not a great team, though, but they are what they are. P.J. Fleck has coached 11 years. He's been a head coach for 11 years at Western Michigan, and I think this is his sixth year as a Big Ten coach. This is P.J. Fleck about the Wolverines. I think they're the best football team I've seen in 11 years of being a head coach. I've never seen a football team like that deep. They are truly like a boa constrictor, and they do not beat themselves. They're very good at each position. They're very aligned with everything that they do. They know who they are, and they go and execute that game plan. There were times they did it at will tonight. He called them one of the deepest, one of the best, fastest, strongest teams, and they do not make mistakes. So we're at the point where Michigan, they're kind of under the radar because they're not playing anybody, but you're starting to get these kind of quotes from those kind of places, and you start going, geez, is this like legit? Are they really that good? So Pat, is Harbaugh going to get a contract, and does he deserve it? It's simply, is P.J. Fleck his agent? That may have been my thing.
yeah, maybe P.J. gets like a nice steak dinner out of that, but I'm not sure he gets much more. Yeah, he's probably going to get the contract, and yeah, he deserves it. We clown on ADs all the time on here for making bad decisions, but what Ward Manuel did with Harbaugh a few years ago, as you noted, that was some deft ADing, right? They handled that situation extremely well. They got the results they wanted, and now it's time to pay the man. And so he's going to get paid. He's going to get paid a ton. He'll be up there, you know, 10, 11 million with the highest paid guys. That's what the market bears. And we'll see if this team is that good. Frankly, honestly, I've only watched them in bits and pieces because their games are non-competitive and they're not playing good teams, including Minnesota. So P.J. Fleck may also be doing a little bit of his own self-serving and damage control and say, look, yeah, we just got destroyed, but that's because that team is so good. Here in year six, PJ is struggling a bit, but I do believe Michigan is very good, and I do believe Jim Harbaugh is going to get paid, and he's earned the money.
Yeah, I agree. When you look back on it, that was a crazy time to see a coach take a 50% pay cut. That's rare, right? You don't see that very often. I don't know how often you see an athletic director even have the gall, right, to ask a coach to do that. So it was certainly that was an interesting situation. Hey, Dan, I'm feeling pretty good about that Michigan national championship pick. The Wolverines look good, but they just still it's one of those, you know, Paul, they haven't played nobody, right? Just still waiting for them to play somebody. Who is it this week?
Indiana.
God. Yeah, I mean. The schedule is just like, we got to wait till November for them.
November 11th, I think, right? They play Penn State.
Yeah, the fourth, do they play Maryland on the 4th? Or no, Maryland's in between on the 18th. I mean, but it's like the last three games are the only three games.
Like, people were complaining, and I get, like, you know, do our top 10 or whatever, and I'll put an emphasis on schedules and specifically on, like, on good wins and rate teams basically by their best win, especially this early in the season when several teams don't have a loss or only have one loss. And, I mean, you look at the top 10, maybe even 15 teams, and everybody has a better win than Michigan. Everybody. Yes. That's at least in my top 10. Everybody has a better win than Michigan. And so just kind of waiting for them to play somebody.
We will see. But those are strong things, and certainly a Harbaugh contract is in order. And I think the thing about it is we see a lot of dumb contracts. We see a lot of overreactions after one season, right? You know, the famous kind of Charlie Weiss example at Notre Dame. And then there's also the idea of, like, the fake, oh, he's in demand. Mel Tucker. Mel Tucker's going to go to LSU, right? Let's just react and give him a huge deal. Harbaugh is a proven commodity. I mean, they may never be this good again, but he's been there, what, 10, 11 years? I mean, it's 2, 3, 4,
2015
five,
was
six,
his first
seven,
year.
Eight,
so is this
nine
eight
years.
Or nine?
Ninth nine year. I mean, he wanted state. I mean, he went as this is a proven commodity. He's an alum.
Yeah.
The proof of concept is there. I think they're well positioned with the NIL and the transfer portal to be really, really good. I think that has helped Michigan football close that elite gap on teams. They're able to bring in, they get old, stay old. They bring in good players. He's a very good football coach. You can't win at San Diego, Stanford, make a Super Bowl, and then win at Michigan without being a good football coach. And now that they can kind of do some of the things that they weren't quite able to do, it's there. So I don't think giving Jim Harbaugh some incredible deal is a bad idea at all compared to just reacting after one good season or we had one good player. He's got that much going for him. All right, the big game this weekend, we will talk a lot of games on Thursday for Race for the Case. It's not as loaded of a weekend, but there is some sneaky good games, and then there is a couple just obvious ones. And the obvious one here is Oregon visiting Washington. Number 8, Oregon. Number 7, Washington. Game is in Seattle. It's 3:30 Eastern time, 12:30 out there. This is the kind of Pac-12 matchup we missed the last 3, 4, 5 years, particularly for a gap there of about 5 years when the Pac-12 is eliminated from playoff contention. This is one of those games. We're not sure. We'll see how it plays out. But this is the kind of game we are going to gain a great deal with the 12-team playoff, but this is the kind of game we are losing a little something. Because whoever wins this game has the inside track, not just on the Pac-12 championship game and the Pac-12 title, but the playoff. And you lose this game, and it is either impossible to make the playoff or it's going to be some tough sledding. I don't know if the Pac-12 has enough cred in the committee. It shouldn't matter, but has the cred in the committee where they can get two teams in the way a Big Ten and an SEC have proven to be able to do it in the past.
Maybe they'll do it out of sympathy, the people in the room. You know,
or maybe now it's
very
Big Ten
sympathetic
teams.
Group.
Washington yeah. State and Oregon State are like, bring us that cash. Every dollar you make in playoff money, we're getting it. Mm-hmm. As long as we win our little, I think they're going to arbitration, 10-2 arbitration.
Yeah, mediation.
Yeah. It's very nice. Mm-hmm. It's like a nice divorce they're trying. We'll both respect. Yeah, you know, It all works until they start dating other people, and then I've seen that act before. Anyway. The Big 12's like, Big 10's like, yo, bring it. No, don't give their money to those guys. Oregon, Washington, huge game. Bo Nix, Michael Penix. Thoughts on this one? I know both of you are going to the game. Ross, you want to start?
Yeah, Chris Felica with, I was about to say ESPN, but Fox.
The Bear.
Tweeted this out. I think it's an incredible stat. Oregon at Washington is the first Pac-12 matchup of teams 5-0 or better since 2004. So 19 years. That year, USC beat Arizona State 45-7. So 0 Pac-12 matchups of 5-0 or better in the last 19 years. Over that same span, The SEC had 15 of those matchups. It's just an incredible stat, and shows you obviously the difference, you know, between the two leagues, but also just shows also how big this matchup is and how rare and unusual a matchup like this is. And I'm excited. You know, I've never been up there to Seattle. You heard stories about the stadium and on the lake and all this stuff. So the sail, they have their own version of sailgating up there. So I'm excited to see kind of the atmosphere. And it's a huge game. Both of these teams do, of course, play USC later in the season. I think Washington maybe plays there, and Oregon hosts USC. So the winner of this game obviously will be kind of in the driver's seat. And if they can take care of business with the Trojans, they should lock up a spot, you would think, of the championship game.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the biggest games of the year for sure. It is a phenomenal setting. Seattle's obviously one of the great cities in the country and the world. And the stadium setting is fantastic. It's looking like it's going to be cloudy, which is kind of a regular occurrence up there. But on a sunny day at Husky Stadium, man, there are not many nicer settings in college football. But here's my concern for both schools, both programs here. Will it ever be this good again after this, when they're leaving for the Big Ten? Right now, these two teams at the top, and I've seen USC play. I think they're better than USC. USC plays no defense. I think the winner of this game takes a big step towards winning the Pac-12, certainly going to the Pac-12 championship game. Next year, you're going into a league where you are in a probably 4-5 team muddle to be the fourth best team in that league, because Michael Penix isn't coming back. Bo Nix is not coming back. That doesn't mean those programs won't still be very good. Occasionally can be great, but you are taking a step up in competition. You're taking a step up in difficulty of travel. You're taking a step up in scheduling and all those sort of things. And so, like, be careful what you wish for. Yep, you're going to make all that money. But right now, what you've got in the Pac-12 with this game this year, this week, is awfully good. And they are voluntarily stepping away from that and stepping into something different next year that's going to be a lot harder.
Yeah, call Lincoln, Nebraska, and ask them how it goes.
Yeah.
I'm continually fascinated by this concept that had the Pac-12's TV deal been coming up in like 2 years, how much more money would they have gotten?
Yeah.
And how less desperate would the schools have been saying, look, we got nothing going in this league. If the playoff had expanded earlier, they went, what are they haven't had anyone since Washington, right? Is that still
Washington 2016?
2016. She's sitting around and going, we're not getting in the playoff. We're not getting the money. Let's go. Let's jump. And does it stop UCLA and USC? Because you're right. It's a lot easier to win this league than getting into this 18 team deal where the Buckeyes and Wolverines and Nittany Lions aren't moving. Now there is a lot of, Pete used to say, flotsam and jetsam in the Big Ten West. But
yes,
this is the kind of game that should get a nice rating, that should sit there and say, hey, this is worth more money. Oh, wait, we have Deion Sanders in Colorado. We got the right? Well, this is the type of game that should get a big rating. Hey, USC's popping a little bit, right? They're exciting, right? This is the transfer portal is helping us out. I just feel like the timing crushed them. Also, very, very interesting report by John Canzano, Bald Face Truth newsletter out of Oregon. Him and John Wilner do a tremendous job on a podcast, Pac-12, and do a covering the Pac-12. And he dug in and reported and worked hard to find out who was it at the Pac-12 that's told ESPN, we want $50 million a year. Because what happened was ESPN was going to renew the Pac-12, and they're going to offer a certain amount of money, and the ESPN Pac-12 could either take ESPN's deal or go out to market and see what they could find. And he discovered, and it was acknowledged that University of Utah president Taylor Randall came up with this figure of $50 million a year. And now the what's the ACC getting? 31?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
But Big 12 is 31. ACC might be a little more.
ACC 37.
I think it's 37.
36, okay. Yeah.
Pac-12 hadn't made a playoff in 6 years. Hadn't had these Deion Sanders effect hadn't started. They didn't have this year where everyone's focused on Seattle. This will be a big game. The championship game should be – it's going to be fascinating. He comes and they say, tell him $50 million. And his quote here is he admitted it. He said, it is my understanding that any mention of $50, which was higher than any valuation, was only as a potential starting point in negotiations to help us get an estimated true value. So they wanted to go in, tell ESPN $50 million, and have ESPN come back and say $42, right, or something like that.
Right.
Just classic bargaining. And he overplayed the hand so much because ESPN might have been sitting there going 30, 25. I don't know what ESPN was going to want. $30 million. They might have been, and ESPN just said, screw it. We're out.
Yeah.
Have you looked at our business model? It didn't go in all that well. I got to pay for the I got to bid for football. I got to bid for NBA. I got to bid for the college football playoff. I got to bid for all the, I got the SEC. We're not paying it. So they just walked. And then they had to go to market, and there was no market. So that bluff by Utah, of all people, conservative old Utah, quiet old Utah, good soldier Utah, blows the whole thing. I would have thought this ego would have come from USC or UCLA.
Out.
Right.
They were already out, right.
They were already out, that's right.
From, yeah, you thought it would come from like an Oregon or even Washington or Arizona. People, teams who are kind of flirting with leaving, right? The Arizonas, the Washingtons, and Oregons of all the schools. I was surprised to see that when I read that it was Utah who was probably as committed to the Pac-12 with as anybody, as the four, the group of four, Stanford, Cal, Oregon State, and Washington State. There were really, I guess, in a way, six. It was Utah, Arizona State, and then Stanford, Cal, Oregon State, and Washington State, you know, who really wanted to stay together. And of all the schools, it was him. And I think, and we've talked about this before, but when the Big Ten got their deal done, and it was worth what it was worth, a little over $1 billion, they thought they were going to be. I had somebody tell me, and we wrote this at the time, a few weeks or a month ago or so, whenever all the stuff started happening. I guess 2 months now, is that they thought they were worth 2/3 of what the Big Ten's deal was, and that was without the LA market. I don't know why they thought they were worth 2/3, but
they destroyed it all. And I agree. Like, you're Washington, Oregon, they're excited right now about going to the Big Ten, and it'll probably be good. But they're getting less money. They're getting half shares for a while, right? Or some reduced rate.
Yeah, yeah, they're getting half. Yeah, 30. They're getting $30 million,
mm-hmm. And they're never going to be. It's just a crazy situation that I just feel like if this season was 3-4 years ago, USC and UCLA might say, well, we don't need to leave. We're good. And if the after they left, if the negotiations had just come in and say, hey, ESPN, what do you think? Do what the Big 12 did and say, we're just going to take what's on the table. We're going to take $31 million. And if maybe the ESPN says, hey, we'll give you $35 million. And sitting there going, hey, look, we got a great group here. We got some teams. We have new considerations on way talent gets dispersed around the country that is benefiting us. We got the former Indiana quarterback against the former Auburn quarterback. We don't have to recruit these guys anymore. We just get them. We got the former Oklahoma quarterback. We got a former Texas quarterback. We got a former Clemson quarterback. We got all sorts of guys. We are good. And we got Deion. We're good. And it's just not going to happen. So might be the pinnacle of Pac-12 right here at the end. Still amazing to me.
I mean, it is a wild confluence of bad timing, bad vision, bad decisions, but the timing is truly incredible for them to have this season, because they are really good out there.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, we're talking more Pac-12 in the first 6 weeks of this season than we did like entire years easily. We used to try to occasionally bring a Pac-12 game in just because we have listeners in LA. And,
right.
I mean, just be like, well, hey, it's still kind of interesting, you know. And it's like, now we don't have to. This is the game of the week. Everyone's going to be there, and it's huge. And it's like, you said their version of sailgating. I think they invented sailgating, didn't they?
They did. They did.
They're looking and going, Baylor's got that, like, backed up river water.
Like a basin.
Yeah, you know? They created their own pond.
Tennessee.
Tennessee's legit.
Tennessee's got a river. That's Tennessee. Nice.
There's a Navy. That's a real river. That's a real river. Yeah. What's first, the river or the ocean? I don't know. I think it's the river, right? Does the river feed the ocean?
Lord.
I'm not going down that rabbit hole. Let's go. Don't want to know.
Geologic earth formations.
Seems like we'll it. The ocean doesn't go into the river except right by the tides, the tidal rivers. But that is not the Tennessee River. Miami. More on Neil Gate. Mario, take a knee. No, kneel the ball. Mario, kneel the ball. Came out again, still owning it. I made the wrong call. I take full ownership in not taking a knee and giving them an opportunity to have a couple extra plays and preventing us from sealing the win. He says everyone showed up with a tremendous attitude, players and coaches. OC Shannon Dawson came out and jumped on the grenade and said he made the call. Cristobal says he should have overruled him. And then in the most Miami thing of all time, the day after the worst coaching blunder you're going to see, they land a commitment from Nye Carr, this like four-star, highly top 100 wide receiver from Georgia who had just decommitted from Georgia. And he didn't decommit from Georgia because Georgia signed someone better. They didn't want to lose him. So Mario Cristobal, the full Mario Cristobal experience, lands elite recruit at the same time the program is completely dysfunctional in the last 40 seconds of the game.
Nye Carr looked at that game and said, I want to play for those guys who don't have any idea how to manage the end of a game. Yeah, that's where I want to go.
Kirby Smart, like, he is so solid as a coach. They got to be sitting up there in Athens going, you got to be kidding me. We have not lost in 3 years. We are unbelievably sound program. Great coaching. They don't screw up at the end of the games anymore. Now, they did a little bit early in his career. Yeah. And you decommit from us, and you're going to play for that guy.
That's college football, man.
The whole thing is so Mario Cristobal, too. You know, he's known as not the greatest sideline in-game coach, but is a great motivator, you know, and then a great recruiter, a great acquirer of talent, and it's just so fitting that they goof on the field and then turn around and he's on the trail landing a commitment. Very on brand.
I want to talk more about Ross's story about Greg Sankey. Spent Saturday with Greg Sankey on the private jet. And he went to the Red River Shootout. Then they went to the Alabama A&M game, flew around Texas, hung out with the SEC commissioner, discussed a lot of issues. It's a great read. I can't encourage enough. You go on sports.yahoo.com or Yahoo Sports, go to College Football and find the story. It's a great story. It's also on our Ross's Twitter feed at Ross Dellinger. Beyond the obvious of the story, because we'll make people read. I know some of you guys, not really big readers.
Well, it's a long one, too.
It's a little long.
You need, our need guys, a few minutes.
Yeah. Maybe, you know, not the most cerebral brunch of all of us, but that's all right. We're not trying. Anyway, if you don't want to read, we're not going to recap the story. But what I want to ask is, what are two or three of your biggest takeaways that you would pull out of that story or weren't mentioned but are really interesting anyway?
Well, I think anytime you can spend so long with a person, you learn more about them, obviously, and you can kind of humanize them better, I guess, is maybe the right word. I mean, I think a big part of our jobs in journalism is kind of humanizing athletes, coaches, administrators who fans see from afar and sometimes view as like robots, but I know they're real people too. So when you spend so long with somebody, especially in the cramped quarters that we were in for much of the, for say three of the 12 hours, Yeah, you learn a lot about them, a lot about their past, a lot about how they think, how they make decisions. You know, it was a lot of interesting things. He's got, I don't even know where to start. I mean, you know, we talked a lot about his background as a person, which Pat wrote about in length last year, about kind of his, in a profile of him and going back to his past. And so we talked a lot about those things. But, you know, we also talked moving forward in the landscape of college sports. And I think we kind of maybe have mentioned this on the show before, but we talk a lot about NIL, you know, and that's like the big thing the last several years, NIL, how to fix it, all the guardrails, all this stuff. And really at the highest level where Greg resides, that's not number one anymore, right? Number one of these court cases that are ongoing. And that was made apparent to me even before us spent time with him, but certainly was emphasized in my time with him in his concern. And it's funny because after he left on Saturday, he went to New Orleans on Sunday where the SEC presidents met Monday, and the main topic of discussion was the House lawsuit case and what to do about it and how catastrophic, as one president put it to me, it could be. And so that was really kind of eye-opening. You know, we always talk about the split of the Power Five or the FBS splitting away from everybody else, from the NCAA and governing itself. And I think these court cases could be the catalyst, right, for that to happen. And Greg Sankey didn't talk too much specific about the court cases, but he did talk about his frustration again with the system in the governance model. And so did Tony Petitti at the Big Ten. And something I noted in there that I think is important, it's Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti are talking quite a bit. They're both New Yorkers. They have a past together that goes back 20 plus years or so, with Tony's work in TV and Greg at the, you know, within college athletics for 30 years. So they're discussing, I think, maybe trying to even pave the way for a future. So that's all. It's a lot. It was a lot to put down in print, but it was a fascinating look at both the past of this person, Greg Sankey, and what lies ahead in the future.
I admittedly haven't read it yet, so I'm on the bad list with the rest of our podcast listeners who haven't.
Just came out.
Yeah.
Posted during the pod.
Yeah,
it
yeah,
posted
basically.
Like 15 minutes before we started taping, give me a little bit of grace there. But no, I mean, Sankey to me is the most interesting person in college sports. He's the most powerful, but he also brings some interesting dynamics to the equation. He's extremely smart, but he did grow up very blue collar, nothing very easy necessarily. You can see he is so measured publicly, but there is an edge. There is a little bit of a chip there, and it does come out on occasion when he gets competitive about the SEC against other conferences. He chooses his spots wisely to kind of wield his hammer and to take his shots. There's some other people in conference leadership positions, I think, that he doesn't particularly care for the way they do things, and he will occasionally make that known. He does certainly use the bully ball pulpit that the SEC is to his advantage and to the league's advantage, which you would expect because it's, as we've pointed out 9 million times on the pod, it's everybody out for themselves. And so if you're out for yourself, that's what you do in college sports. But yeah, where this is going is fascinating. And I do think, look, the SEC and the Big Ten are in the power positions. If those two commissioners can work together, they will, I think, probably have a bit of a strategic, I don't know whether I'd say alliance, that word has been pretty well trashed in college sports, but a strategic understanding of what's best for those two and how to get there. And with the mounting court cases and the legal landscape in front of them, there needs to be a little bit of planning coordination.
What I the whole employee-employee thing, non-employee, union, non-union, all of this stuff is going to be that's the stuff I've been saying for years they need to focus on. That's the big change. The NIL stuff was just coaches complaining.
Yeah, it's happening. People,
right, and now they've got to do it. They've wasted time on stuff listening to coaches complain because they lost a recruit, right?
Yep.
And that was a waste. They're not getting anything done in Congress. They never were getting anything done in Congress on that. So they took their
but a new NIL hearing, another hearing, Dan. Did you see
have,
that?
Have another hearing. What, Charlie Baker's going to talk now?
Yeah,
right?
That'll do it.
They don't have a Speaker of the House. We have, there's wars going. I don't want to, this is a relief from all the problems of the country. Come on.
A week from today, a week from Tuesday, October 17th.
Great, another hearing.
The Senate Judiciary, and Charlie Baker will be a witness, along with a collective CEO, Walker Jones of Ole Miss. The Ole Miss collective will be alongside Baker and a couple others, which is a fascinating kind of dynamic.
Well, maybe there'll at least finally be somebody who presents another opinion on this.
Definitely will.
In the middle of this exciting parity-driven season, with record television ratings, full stands, and all this, let's do another hearing to say how we're dead. Doesn't make any sense. But this is what they do. Fine. We got to move on to something else. What I like about Greg Sankey, who is far more powerful than Charlie Baker, is he spent his entire career in college athletics. He takes this stuff. He has proven through the years to care about college athletics and the future of college athletics. His work on the playoff showed that. His work through the years. Everyone got mad at him because Texas called, and he took the call, and he said, yeah, you're coming. We're taking Texas and Oklahoma. And they all got bitter about it, but everybody else would have taken that call. The bell of the ball, the homecoming queen called and said, what are you doing Friday night? He said, let's go. That's not his fault. And so he's been unfair. Like that whole part in the alliance proved to be a total joke. But what I like is he's not a commissioner that's coming in and saying, I'm going to be here for 5 years. I need some kind of initiative, because those are the worst kind of bosses that anyone can have, is I'm here short time, but I'm going to pass some initiative. I'm going to do something and declare it a victory when it's not. And it's not in the long-term good of an organization or a university or whatever. But I'm going to do this, and I'm going to declare victory, and I'm going to go get another job. And Greg Sankey's this is his job. So I think he cares more. And I think even if you're not an SEC fan, you can sit there and go, okay, this guy's not going sitting there saying, hey, can I be the CEO of this television network, or can I go to the NFL, or can I go to this, or can I go to that? This is what I want to be.
That's a good point. And I wanted to amplify on it just briefly this is a guy who was the golf coach at Northwestern State University, right? And drove the van around. He has been in college athletics his entire career. That's all he's wanted to do. And the other part of that is he's gotten on all those thankless, miserable committees at the NCAA, to reform the rule book and everything else. And he remembered, Ross, he came out a couple of months ago and kind of expressed frustration with people over, there's like a room of 40 people and nobody asked any questions. He was one of the only ones asking questions. Like, he wants people to roll up their sleeves and get into the policy of stuff.
Well, and as he told him, I spent a lot of time toward the end of the story writing about it. Is the biggest really issue within the NCAA is that it's too big, and Division I's too big, and even FBS probably is too big. And he kind of went off on that, and it's to that point where he talked about a few months ago. He was in a committee meeting, a D1 council meeting, and they were given a presentation by the NIL subcommittee. And at the end of the presentation, there was, someone asked any questions, and Greg was the only one to speak up. And I think part of his point in telling that story was all the everybody in these committee rooms don't have the same problems, right? That he does, that Tony Petitti does. And he mentioned that story, is it right for Fordham in Florida to be in the same room making decisions? They're not anything alike. They don't They don't. They're not like minded. They don't have the same resources. They don't have the same missions. So I think, you know, eventually, which we all know, right? We're heading for some kind of different governance structure. And he talked a lot about that with me.
Small college golf coach, but he's not sitting there going, well, the cross country team in D3 works just as hard as the Oklahoma football players. That's not what we're talking about. All right, Fat Bear Week finals. The voting is Tuesday. The final is Tuesday, and we got fur in the game, I guess you'd call it. Grazer versus Chunk is the final.
Oh man,
Grazer versus Chunk. Grazer. Now look at they. I found somebody else online who was also complaining about this Grazer pick on this Twitter. They were tweeting at the park, and I jumped in. I jumped in and tweeted also. Yes, garbage. Grazer's going to win because of the photo. It's fixed. I'm guaranteeing it. Grazer, this photo's at an angle. Grazer just looks enormous. Enormous. Looks clearly like the fattest bear. Chunk looks pretty good, and it's got a little bit of an angle too. Grazer, in voting, because it's the public who votes. It's not actually who the fattest bear is. It's just what the public thinks, and we see one picture. So they've rigged it for Grazer, and it's going to happen. Grazer defeated Holly, 83,300 votes to just 18,500 votes. I think we're still getting votes coming in from Maricopa County, but, you know, I don't think that'll they're always late. Grazer is now facing Chunk. Chunk defeated 901, who a Final Four, you don't even have a name. Come on, National Parks. Give 901 a name. I still think 747, I think they were calling it Fat Bear 1, they were calling it. 747. Or Fat, what is it? Is it Air Force 1?
Fat Bear 1.
Fat Bear 1. Chunk defeated 901, 70,000 to 33,000. So who has Grazer and who has Chunk?
Holly. I have Holly.
Oh, Holly's Holly. Out. So
no,
Chunk.
I thought you said she was in.
No, Holly got beat, got crushed. You can't beat Grazer. You can't beat Grazer. You should jump in on the fix. It's a growing movement. There's another guy. It's a growing movement.
It's we've come to this, listenership. Dan Wetzel now sounds like the Ohio State fans who still want Javon Bullard penalized for targeting in last year's Peach Bowl. That's how bitter he is over these results. You tweeted that there was Fat Bear controversy. There's not. Your bear lost. That's it.
No. There is. And at underscore math, GHAMHNA, said Bear Force One got hosed. That's what they're calling it. Bear Force One got hosed by a bad pick this year, and I will die on this hill. I said this is 100% true. I'm wasting my time commenting on this. And then Moco Bear / B3ARM0K said that's right. He backed me up too. So there's three of us.
You're fighting a Twitter war like Bucknut 27.
Yes, it's like the old BCS computers. Yeah. You're like, no, the Harris Bowl is garbage. Right? That is what happened. Anyway, Sean, are you still in this? You have Chunk, right?
I selected Chunk, yes.
Let's go,
Chunk. Pull the upset, baby. Defeat this corrupt organization, the Katmai National Park and Preserve in Southwest Alaska.
Corrupt.
It has volcanoes, coast, tundra, cultural history, and a fixed fat bear contest.
We need a competing national park to have their own fat bear contest.
Let's get another one.
Nah,
I still love my. I'm,
Chunk, we need Chunk's, the XFL of
Chunk
fat
is a
bear.
Good competitor too. Grazer is too, but it's just. How are you not outraged, Ross? You just lost to the same thing I lost to.
I know. I'm ticked off. Can't you tell?
Yeah. Don't see it.
I think the biggest problem is that Grazer's before picture looks like a fixed picture, whereas Chunk's before picture, he still looks kind of big and sturdy. So if you're looking at two fixed pictures in the forced perspective, we're looking at a massive Grazer.
Absolutely.
And if Chunk wins, Lord. I want to race for the case. I want it to count for me.
Ah, see? See?
No. No, no, and no. The Fat Bear contest does not go in race for the case.
It's going to be a monumental upset. Chunk is going to
Speaking of race for the case, how's that going?
Let's review as tradition. Somebody went 5-0-1 last week. Let's see who is that. Oh, it was me.
But you were like 10 games. He was under 500.
Not anymore, my friends. Not so five fast, my friends. Ross is leading 21-16-2. Sean is 20-17-2. I am 16-21-2. Digging out from my early hole. Pat is 14-23-2, which means Tap 40, the famed Tap 40, just pick the opposite of Pat, you would be 9 games over 500 if you just Pat, Tap 40 in first place. This is not the first time that's happened.
I took some brutal beats on Saturday. I really did.
Well, took some brutal picks. All right, one final story before we go here. Update on another story. I'll tell us fans of lawsuits against Big Food, in this case Big Hot Sauce, we're taking some L's. We lost the Wendy's and McDonald's suit about deceptive advertising that makes the Big Mac look like this. You're gonna get this big huge thing, and the one you get is not as good. I got this Burger King exec, I don't even know the guy, Deep King, he's trash-talking us for ever thinking BK will lose their suit. He's predicting victory. Deep King is all over us. And then Wednesday, a class action suit against the makers of Texas Pete Hot Sauce was dismissed. The lawsuit was made against the North Carolina-based T.W. Garner Food Company because the plaintiff, Philip White of L.A., noted that he... should not have to pay more for hot sauce because they say Texas Pete kind of implies that the hot sauce was made in Texas, which presumably has better hot sauce than North Carolina, but it was actually made in North Carolina. So it should be North Carolina Pete hot sauce, not Texas Pete. He said it was deceptive advertising. A judge did not agree. And the T.W. Garner Food Company celebrated by saying, since the lawsuit was filed, we've remained steadfast in our position that our product labels and trademark are truthful and not misleading in any respect, and the lawsuit has no merit. And so that's it. Texas Pete, it's really North Carolina Pete, but they get to keep claiming Texas. So I don't know. The ACC is now going to SMU. Maybe they got a claim there.
That's one where I was actually on the side of Big Hot Sauce. I can't remember my exact reasoning, but it's like, I mean, Tex Winter can still be called Tex Winter, even though he hadn't spent his whole life living in Texas, right? I mean, you know, it's Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. I can go down the street here in Kentucky and go to Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen. It's okay. I'm fine with Texas Pete being called Texas Pete.
Like a Nashville chicken sandwich, but yeah. Still,
you know, come on.
There's got to be some basis in it. Texas Winter was born near Wellington, Texas in 1922.
Well, yeah, but he doesn't live there. Did he have to relinquish his name after that? No,
he moved to Compton. Moved away from... He went, where did he? Oh, no, they moved to Huntington Park, California when he was 14.
See, nobody said you have to be California Winter now.
But he was
Cali
based
winter.
There. Texas Pete's got nothing. It's in North Carolina.
It's okay.
Have some pride in Carolina. They get great barbecue. I love their vinegar barbecue sauce out of North Carolina.
Ooh, yeah. Big fan.
My favorite big kind. Fan. I don't know. Same. Anyway, Pat, we're losing big time on this. Apparently, the judges are agreeing that these lawsuits are totally stupid.
Completely frivolous.
Why are we wasting our time?
Who knew? But lawyers.
Good
are...
pod. Good pod.
It's like Congress and NIL. What are we doing? Wait, what?
Well, you know, these are real issues for real people. I'm just going to say that that Philip White of Los Angeles, you're the hero. We don't deserve you, but we need you. So keep filing your lawsuits. And Texas Pete, we know you lie. You're a liar, Texas Pete. A lot of corruption on this pod. We're uncovering a lot of corruption. We may not win. We may not win Fat Bear Week. We may not win in the courts. We may have Big King trash talking us from the Burger King headquarters.
Deep King.
C-class suite.
Deep King.
Deep King, not Big King.
Deep King.
Deep King is trashing me and direct messaging me. I don't care. I'm standing up for the people. This is the people's podcast. So keep listening.
God.
Here we go. All right, Dan.
We're done. Off the rails. We'll be back on Thursday to talk more college football and make some picks. So continue listening. Thank you. Appreciate you. Talk to you later.